Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you're listening to you with your host, Avenger Satanist, and the Beast.
Hey, thanks for tuning in, everybody. I'm T.C. Downey, or Beast Zeno. This is my co-host, Avenger Satanist. Avenger, how you doing today, man?
That's good. Yep, you and me, we're in the tentacle fucking temple, which is our version of the motherfucking house.
Awesome.
And I think we already have Jason King on. Are you there, Jason?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yep, we can hear you.
Oh, cool.
Awesome. Mr. King, how you doing?
Oh, cut with the Mr. shit. What's up, guys?
Shit, how you doing, man?
Oh, you know, decent.
Decent, that's
good. I took the night off tonight, so I can really chill, you know, that kind of stuff.
I'm sure you got some video responses to put out now, huh?
Oh, for who? For Sean
Hartnell? Yeah.
Actually, no, what I did was I PM'd him because he's not getting it. He's kind of a one-dimensional thinker, and I'm trying to get him to think outside the box a little bit. So
awesome.
If he didn't get Suratush Shaitan, then that's just him. And actually,
yeah.
You know what's kind of ironic is now that you guys are talking about this, is that there's more Lovecraftian influence in that one little piece than he can possibly understand. You know, but I'm not going to spell it out. I like leading the horse to water, but I can't make him drink. So.
Well, okay, I'm pretty intrigued now. Can you just give us a taste of the Lovecraftian influenced?
Well,
there's a
topos in Lovecraftian literature, something that he does that kind of evokes an air, if you will. So if you consider what I just said in light of what the particular piece that he's critiquing, it might make sense. It might click. I'm not sure. You know, the Necronomicon, for example,
right.
Or I could list any number of other works that are mentioned in his literature that are perhaps not real, but meta-real in a way.
Right. And Beast, you know, he was talking to me a little bit earlier about that part that guy, Hartnell guy, was discussing, and it's what were you saying, Beast? You were saying something about it's satanic, but it's from...
What I was saying was that the idea behind it, if you read the opening, Jason states that it's, you know, very doubtful that it's even an authentic antique piece of work, but that it had a parallel with the satanic verses.
Well, not only that, what there's to consider is, like, for example, Lovecraft himself did a history of the Necronomicon, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, so factor all that into the entire piece as it stands. It's only one page long, which is why I can't imagine why he would say that's filler. But
well,
I mean, if he was going to accuse me of filler, what he probably should have done was go to, like, later on in the book where I, you know, do an entire Tibetan Tantra and say that was filler. Because that was like a good 6-7 pages, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right. Well, what I actually think is interesting is the fact that he's leaving out the importance of building up lore.
Exactly. You're getting it now. You're getting exactly where I'm coming from with this.
Oh, I knew where you were coming from with it when you wrote it in the book. I mean, as I read it, I was like, oh, okay, he's building up the lore for what he's presented. It's actually more evident, in my opinion, in the first volume of the Five Books of Cain.
Exactly.
Than it is
along the same lines.
Yeah.
I'm not claiming that I unearthed some text somewhere or something like that by any stretch, but...
The interesting parallel about that is that's exactly the same kind of concept that Venger was working off of when he decided to start building the Cthulhu cult.
Which is why I love his work. I really do. I'm a fan. I'm not a hater. I know it might come across that way with the Libre AO book review that I did, but
that's
you know,
okay.
I hold people
appreciate
that
the honesty. I don't actually trust either people or opinions that are 100% positive across the board. I mean, if no one has anything but great things to say about me, I'm immediately suspect of them and their understanding. So, hey, I can take it. So, Jason, for the people listening who have no idea what post-Satanism is about, can you just give us like a brief synopsis of what the book is about and what your kind of philosophy or paradigm is about quickly?
Well, the book itself is it's basically a tool. It's an open-ended tool for the person who grabs hold of it to be able to access it on many levels. That's why there are two font styles in there. The large font style can be read straight through, like Bizino said, in about an hour. And that was kind of the intent, was so that you could just take the large font style and read it straight through and have pretty much a basic understanding of what Satanism can be, but not what it is, because it's not my place to define what it is. That's for the individual to define. So what I'm trying to do is give a roadmap or give, you know, a pointer or two so that the individual can say, okay, wait, this resonates with me. I understand exactly where you're coming from with the current. And I'll get back to that in a second. The master, et cetera, and then be able to take that and make it relevant to one's own life. Because if you can't do that, then it's just me talking and you listening rather than you talking your own.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So
yeah.
Postmodern Satanism for me is an understanding of the world, an understanding of the nature of the world and the nature of the person in the world and how those two vectors, there's one pointing inward and one pointing outward, and those kind of correspond to the left-hand path and right-hand path respectively, how those two vectors are actually identical on a deeper level and how to identify them within oneself and within the world and how to make oneself a better person as a result. So that's kind of what it is, I would say. And the current is kind of like the glue that binds, or the tie that binds, if you will. It's kind of what kind of set, you know, sets it all in motion.
In my perspective, the current itself, as you're describing it, doesn't actually embody the totality of energies in the world, but rather a specific, I want to say epidemic, but it's more like a phenomenon of epidemics in the
an
fact
operative
that
force.
Right, it's an operative force, yeah, that you know, it's basically its own internal flame. It puts things to judgment and weighs its merit and value.
Yeah, but to the former thing that you were saying, or the first thing you were saying, is that no, it is not the end all and be all. It is kind of like I said in one of my videos, I think, you know, you have a boss at work. He may not be the boss of the entire company, but he's your boss. He's the guy you have to deal with. And so that's kind of what the current is. It's the most relevant, from our perspective, phenomenal force that we have to deal with. It's not the highest force. It's not the highest reality, but it is the most present.
Right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. So is this more or less like a constant thing, or is it is an ever-changing thing with the individual whose goals and desires and individual self is ever-changing?
Well, that's kind of a hard question to answer. I mean, if you're talking about whether or not the current itself changes, of course, it's the principle of change. But whether or not within an individual, of course, it manifests within the individual, but it tends to be the same thing within that individual. I don't really know. It has to be a substratum. I mean, if everything's changing, then the world is just nothing but flux. There has to be some kind of substratum, and that's kind of what the current is, at least from our perspective. Now, when you get outside of, you know, limited human perspective, then obviously there are higher vistas.
Yeah.
But I don't believe those can be classed satanic, if they can be classed anything at all, which I don't believe they can, which is why I don't really talk about them. But
right.
Okay.
That's interesting. How do you feel about the dark flow, or as astrophysicists are now calling it, the dark flow? Do you think that that's a macrocosm manifestation of the current?
Actually, you know what? I'm kind of leery of physical science insofar as it is gauged over the short term. Over the long term, I think we can make some, you know, pretty educated guesses. Like, for example, the longer a theory's been out there, then the more likely it is to be true. You know what I mean? So, like, for example, I don't really so much doubt relativity. I don't doubt quantum mechanics. In fact, I doubt quantum mechanics less than I doubt relativity, which is how I resolve that paradox. But when you start talking about things like superstring theory and dark matter, dark energy, or dark flow, or whatever you want to call it, I mean, actually, until you said it, I hadn't even heard of that. You know what I mean? And I still don't know exactly what you mean by it, but because I haven't heard of it means it's got to be pretty novel, because I keep up on that kind of thing. So I'm thinking that, you know, it has to be something they just came out with recently, probably within the last year or two.
And, right, actually.
Sorry, go
ahead. Derek posted a link to it on our forum, I don't know, what, maybe 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, it was a pretty recent discovery. You know, basically, there are forces outside our known universe that are pulling,
dark
pulling
matter
on different things. Yeah, pulling on dark matter and pulling on just like a gravitational force. That's outside our universe. It's sort of like pulling things in a certain direction, but mostly it's concentrating on like dark matter and dark energy and stuff. So
see, I'm not sure I entirely buy into the whole dark matter paradigm. I mean, I believe that, of course, there's got to be some kind of matter out there that's not radiant. But whether that's 9/10 of the universe, I'm kind of not buying that. See, what happens is, okay, for example, like when quantum mechanics was discovered, They already had these equations that they were using to like kind of gauge everything, and those equations kept giving them unrenormalizable infinities, which is kind of what happens now when you try to unify quantum mechanics and general relativity. Is you get these unrenormalizable infinities, which means the equations won't come out to some finite answer. And so instead of thinking that perhaps that means that there's 9/10 of the universe that's unseen, perhaps we can say there's a problem with the equations themselves, which is what led to the discovery of quantum mechanics, which had to do with the black body radiation problem in that specific instance. But, I mean, I don't know. I'm one of these kind of guys that I love reading stories like that because I love seeing science progress. I love seeing the new discoveries and everything, but I'm not entirely sure I buy into the whole. I'm especially leery of superstring theory, but anyway.
Right, I agree with you. I would classify myself, if this could be called a classification, a agnostic science guy, because I, you know, I think there's some merit to each scientific discovery and different theory out there, but I don't think any one thing can be said to, you know, encompass, you know, everything or a true understanding of the universe. I think, you know, we can only understand things up to a certain level. And, of course, human beings don't have the capacity to know everything, like, in an objective, consciousness way. So our understanding of, reality and the universe is always going to be limited. You know, quantum physics is probably just a piece of the puzzle, and, you know, eventually maybe we'll get there, but not for a while. So, I don't put too much stock in it either.
I think I'm probably along the same lines as you, gentlemen, although I do find more valid in closed-string theory than anything else. Right. I use the old as above, so below to kind of measure things. If it resonates with things that are going on internally, then it, to me, makes the most sense that it would appear outside. But that's just my humble perspective, and well, obviously you two are probably better educated on the subject than I am.
I think we're all equally educated, which is to say not very much in any of our cases. And that's, I think, what Venza was saying, and I totally agree with it.
Yeah.
We always have to factor the fact that we're just limited human beings. We live on a fucking ball of dust, you know,
right,
circling a gas, ignited gas ball or whatever the fuck, you know what I'm saying? Now I'm sounding all eloquent and shit, you know what I mean? But, no, seriously.
Right.
To think we can, you know, figure out the mysteries of the universe. But see, that's one of the cool things, and I liken this a lot of times to, you know, a movie that you've seen and a movie that you haven't seen. A movie that you've seen, you already know the ending, you already know how it's going to play out, so it kind of loses a luster. Whereas the movie you haven't seen, when you're watching it, you're watching it play out, you're watching everything without really knowing where it's going, and it's far more interesting. Even your favorite movie, the one you like watching over and over and over again, the first time you saw it was the best. And I think that's kind of what life and experience is to a degree, because, you know, we don't have the answers, and that's kind of the cool thing. I know a lot of people get pissed off about that, like, oh, we don't have all the answers or whatever, you know, especially some of these nominal atheists or whatever, but I think that's the fun part of it, you know, because if we had all the answers, it'd be kind of boring.
Right.
We wouldn't be searching, we wouldn't be seeking anymore, we wouldn't be creating, we wouldn't be doing anything, we'd just be like sitting around, oh yeah, that's all it is.
Yeah.
I personally place a lot of importance on the mystic or the things that are mystical in nature over things that are already pretty well known because of that same factor. The discovery of it itself is more intriguing than the actual knowing of it once you've seen it.
Totally agree. Totally agree.
Mm-hmm. So,
Jason, let me ask about any like magical practices you have. I think the listeners would be interested to know, do you, you know, on a regular basis practice, you know, rituals or any kind of, you know, magic, elixir of black magic or ceremonial stuff or chaos magic or satanic rituals, what have you?
I think this answer is going to sound like I'm a little full of myself, but
okay.
I'll go ahead with it anyway. I passed beyond the need for that kind of thing a while back. I still understand it through and through. And I've done it. Believe me, I've done it. I've done my welfare share of it. But it is a tool for expanding consciousness. That's my simple definition of magic. It is a tool for expanding consciousness, whether it be ritual, what have you. Now, once you expand consciousness to a certain degree, then you can affect change in the real. And that's essentially what a ritual is designed to do. Like, you're, for example, you're going to do a destruction ritual or a love ritual or whatever that fuck kind of ritual you want to do. You're attempting to affect change in the real based on a level of connection, kind of like that vector flow that I was talking about earlier, that inward and outward flow. I do that, but by different means. You know what I mean? So I would say I'm a practitioner, but I'm not a practitioner of what you would call standard ritual or standard ceremonial magic, if you will. I've kind of gone outside that box a little bit. I've kind of seen that the emperor wears no clothes, in other words.
Yeah, actually, to be honest, I was hoping your answer would be along those lines, because I kind of feel the same way. But I know that sort of thing is very popular with, let me just call them like the base of the pyramid, you know, or the people starting out, or the people who have sort of intermediate experience, who still get into all the aesthetics and the pomp and circumstance and things like that. I do think once you get advanced enough, once you intellectualize things a bit more, it's easy to get beyond that. And I'm the same way. I mean, I very rarely do, you know, sit down and do actual, like, you know, ritual magic and things like that. But at the same time, I feel like I'm changing reality all the time just by observing it and, you know, focusing my will and you know, tweaking reality as I go just throughout my daily life.
Well, to give you an interesting kind of sideboard of that, when you talk about the standard definitions of, say, for example, lesser magic and greater magic, and then take a look at something, for example, attraction. In the case of attraction, lesser magic, or what is generally classified as lesser magic, is actually more effective than greater magic ever could be. Meaning to be able to go up to somebody and to be able to charm them through physical appearance or whatever. You know what I mean? Or just your mojo, how you carry yourself, is always going to be more effective than sitting in a room and, quote-unquote, channeling demons and or channeling archangels of the corners or whatever the hell you want to call them, you know. Watchtowers,
right.
All that kind of crap ain't going to help you when you get out there and you have to look a woman in the eye and try to get her into bed. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know what I'm saying, because I know you're successful in that regard.
Yeah.
But the people that carry themselves a certain way understand the difference between all these, you know, pseudo-classifications of what is really going on and understand it's all part of the same process. It's all a tool, and the tool is multiform. It's like a Swiss Army knife. Sometimes you need the knife. Sometimes you need the little fucking scissors in there or you know, the little nose picker or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I think, if you want to do like a powerful, substantial, full-blown sit-down ritual or something like that, you know, what's the most frequently you can do it? Like once a night, once like every other day or something? But the lesser black magic or the magical no magic routine or path that we're talking about, you can do that like every other second. So, of course, it's going to add up. It's just like if you do one real big thing a day or a week or something like that, as opposed to doing a ton of little things throughout the day, you're going to actually accomplish more doing a little bit throughout the day than you will one Herculean effort, you know, every other day. So just in time and consistency, you know, I think you're winning the war against reality that way.
No, I totally agree. I think the most potent magicians that have ever lived, like I said, in postmodern Satanism, don't trade under that label. But not only that, they use the what are called quote-unquote lesser techniques more than they use. They don't use, the majority of them have never even understood what greater magic is. They don't sit in circles and chant. Bill Gates
right.
just goes out and makes money. You know what I mean? So, I mean, what money charm did Bill Gates use? He used the charm of making money. That's what he did. It was no, like, he didn't sit in a circle and chant God names all day. He
yeah.
just went out and did it.
Yeah. Well, that actually leads me to another question. In your opinion, how important is it to play the game and to live in the world as it is and try to make something in an ordinary and a mundane way? Say, for example, you know, making money, you know, acquiring things, you know, having sex with girls, you know, the sort of indulgence, materialism sort of thing. As opposed to other pursuits like, you know, things that are less material-based and more maybe consciousness-based or more spiritual. Like, where does that fall?
Well, I mean, for me, is going to be, I mean, I think the only real answer you could ever have for that kind of question is it varies by the individual. And the individual has to reach their own what I call equanimity. Just like it's an internal balance. It's not necessarily like some scales are balanced somewhere or anything like that, but it's an internal type of thing. For me, what that means is I'm successful. I'm making it, you know, like I have a roof over my head, that kind of thing. But I'm not out digging for stuff because, well, I don't want to really put it that way. But an interesting fact is that among lottery winners, the suicide rate is exponentially higher than it is among the average population. You know what I mean? So, or that might even be the case for, you know, celebrity or, you know, just the rich and famous in general. I'm not entirely sure.
Right.
You know what I mean?
No, I totally know. Yeah, I've seen shows and things like that on the alleged curse of lottery winners. Of course, all you have to do is look at the tabloids to know how, at times, deeply unhappy, you know, not only childhood TV stars, but, you know, successful actors and musicians are. I mean, they turn to drinking and drugs and sex as a way to, I don't know, heal the sadness or live with themselves or whatever. So, yeah, money and sex and fame isn't all it's cracked up to be, and it's not the end-all be-all, in my opinion. I like your answer. You kind of need a balance, and it also depends on the individual. You can't just have one without the other.
All right, I've got one, actually. Even though we really haven't expounded too much on what the full deal is with postmodern Satanism, it occurs to me that we're by definition stepping into an unknown paradigm by embracing this philosophy. And one of the most valuable things I found inside of postmodern Satanism was your analysis of Liber AL by Aleister Crowley. And in that, you state that that Crowley knew that he was opening the door for a new aeon, but that he couldn't function within it. Now, my question to you, Jason, is: are you concerned that you will have the same issue?
Wow, that's a really good question. To be honest with you, perhaps if I thought what I was putting out there was the totality of my understanding, I might say that. I'm not sure. That possibility always exists. I don't believe it's a hard and fast rule that somebody who opens a door can't really see through it. I think it tends to be the case, but it doesn't have to be the case, per se. But, wow, that's actually a really good question. You got me halfway speechless because, you know, I have to be humble in the sense to say, well, of course, there's a lot of subtext that I go through in that book talking about how my you know, particular formulation is not the end-all and be-all, and that there will be those that surpass me, et cetera. And I know that's going to happen, and I know that eventually the paradigm is going to go far beyond where I'm taking it. But does that mean that I can't visualize that? I think by even saying that, I'm visualizing it to a degree. You know what I mean?
Certainly, but I mean the same thing could hold true with Aleister Crowley in that specific instance.
No, I see what you're saying. That's why I say it's a very good question because it's getting me to like kind of think. That's why I was a little bit speechless there because I'm thinking, well, we all do have our categories. We all do have the boxes that we're born with them and then we develop them over the course of our lives. And a lot of it's linguistic. A lot of it just has to do with the language we were taught when we were kids because language in and of itself has categories. Like noun, verb, adjective, adverb, that kind of thing. Those are all, that's the way we look at the world. We look at the world that way because we were taught English when we were little kids. You know, other languages have different, you know, parts of speech and different ways of analyzing the world. Well, not only that, but language itself just as a totality is limited. So, of course, I mean, I can see that, but am I going to be limited by the same kind of a box that Aleister Crowley was? I don't necessarily think so just because as the current moves forward, it gets better and better with each iteration, which means that the blind spots tend to shrink with each iteration. You see what I mean? So, like, I might have blind spots, but they're not going to be nearly as large theoretically as Crowley's were. But I don't know.
Well, yeah, but that also goes with the variation of, how do I want to say this, cerebral operation between our time and theirs. For example, this is something we study in my line of work. People who were baby boomers versus Generation X, baby boomers put more emphasis on singular focus. For instance, if they're talking to somebody, they have a really difficult time multitasking and also texting or sending an email or writing something down at the same time, where Generation X itself, I can hold a conversation, send a text message, read a chapter of a book, and drive all at the same time. And as long as I'm, you know, paying full attention to all of those things in order of their importance to me, meaning that my driving would obviously have to be where my focus would be first.
I was going to say, I hope you don't do all that while you're driving. But
the point of it is that we learn to actually parallel process rather than just multitask. And during Crowley's time, the idea of multitasking was difficult, let alone parallel processing.
And yet, I think Aleister Crowley was, you know, very much into multitasking and parallel processing himself, which kind of made him an anomaly in that age that he lived in. Also, I think technology is part and parcel of our human development and our evolutionary process. I don't know if you guys would agree with that, but that's why I think things move faster and communication is more and more an increasing dominant part of our lives.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Sure.
No.
Does one of y'all
no,
have the show?
Yeah, of course.
Does one of y'all have the show open in the background? Because I'm getting a mad amount of feedback, and I'm hoping it's not me.
But usually it's just phone-based. When people actually hear it, it's not that bad.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool.
Yeah, no, actually, it's probably because I had my cell phone on my shoulder. Has it deteriorated now?
Yeah, a little bit. It goes up and down. It's kind of weird. It more happens when Venger's talking than when you're talking. Now, I don't know if that's on his end or on your end because you're listening at the time when he's talking or whatever. I don't know.
Right. That's normal because...
I'm just trying to change the topic because I don't like the fact that you guys got me speechless. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, Okay, well, I actually have another subject in mind already, if y'all don't mind. We're talking about communication. And I made a discovery a little while back in that communication itself is ineffective, meaning that I can't completely describe to you the way that I experience something else using words. The closest I can come is by providing symbols that you can experience yourself. And even then, there's a derivative. Do you think that symbolism is, even though it's the ancestor of verbal communication or written communication, do you think symbolism in itself is more potent than written or verbal communication?
I think it can be. I don't necessarily think that it is. I think there's a reason that language evolved to the point that it's at. For example, like science in the world is done in the English language because the English language is probably the most communicative language when it comes to science, meaning it has the most number of concepts that you can press to percepts. That doesn't necessarily mean, though, that symbolism is not more communicative in certain instances. Like, for example, if you use the, you know, human nervous system or the sensory system, the sense of smell, the olfactory sense, is the most potent, which means, like, when you smell something, you get the most vivid memories of any sense, and that includes, like, when somebody says something to you. So if, like, somebody says to me, like, imagine when you were 3 years old and used those words on me, it might not mean anything, but when I smell something, it automatically transports me mentally back to that time when I was 3 years old because it evokes that in me. So I guess the answer that I'm giving is yes, yes, and no.
That's interesting because what you actually brought up very much parallels something that Ouspensky was talking about in the book In Search of the Miraculous, but at a different level. What he was talking about was making conscious memories. And the way he explained it was that most people, you know, you could talk to them about something that happened 30 years ago, and they can remember that it happened, but they can't psychologically recall and relive this because they didn't consciously make a notation of what the feeling was or what the experience was at that time. That's more of a, I guess, just more of a little side note than anything.
Well, yeah, that kind of gets back to why I'm kind of critical of, you know, that whole movement in a way. Because it kind of strikes me as like a pop psychology or like a parapsychology or almost like a lot of it's made up. Like the Enneagram, for example, just looks like it's pulled right out of somebody's ass. You know what I mean? But that's just me. That's just the way I look at it. So I see kind of what's being said there, but I think that there's a lot to be said for the fact that we are constituted so that we don't remember everything. Because if we remembered everything, we wouldn't be able to survive. So I think there's an evolutionary reason for it as well. It's not just like that we're unenlightened or that we're asleep or what have you, but these are tools that evolution has given us so that we can actually not die. Not get eaten by tigers and shit like that. You know what I mean?
Do you think we would be more successful or more of a superior species or individual if we could remember more than we do, or if we could be, I guess, conscious in the moment and more mindful than we are?
That's interesting. I think that would almost kind of depend on the person and the state of life of the person. Like, for example, I see kind of like an oscillation from the standpoint of like what evolution is doing. I don't see it as just like a pure, like, it's kind of like politics. Politics moves by the same kind of pendulum movement. Like, for example, like the Democrats win big, and then like 4 years later, the Republicans win big and everything. And I know that's kind of a silly analogy, but what I'm getting at is that those evolutionary processes that led to that kind of devolution of the pure facticity or ability of the mind to ascertain facticity in the world are going to swing back and allow, you know, for enlightenment. So, yes, I think we would be better if we could experience more, remember more, live in the moment more. Yes, of course, but I don't think it's because I don't think it happened because, you know, people are by and large just asleep or something like that. I don't see it along the lines of that paradigm.
Okay. And you don't see it as some, like, insidious, universal conspiracy, for lack of a better word, that's sort of keeping us asleep?
Okay. No, not at all. No, I see that.
Have you seen The Matrix?
Yes. My favorite movie. Number one favorite movie. The original Matrix is my number one favorite movie. As a matter of fact, before that movie came out in 99, I was working on a science fiction book, which was called Zero Symmetry, which actually dealt with a lot of the same topics. And once that movie came out, I abandoned working on that book because I was like, they've done it. Or they've done the same – it was nowhere near the same actual storyline, but they hit on the exact same idea that I was getting at, which is like, it's the brain in the vat hypothesis in philosophy, but just getting you to question the nature of reality. Or the nature of your perception of reality. Like, is it true? Or could it possibly be a gigantic hoax? Or, like you said, conspiracy?
Yeah. Okay. I thought you'd say that, but I just wanted to clear that up. also, like a minute or two ago, I think you said evolution, but it sounded to me like you said devolution. You said evolution, right? Or were you making some sort of play on words?
I'm not sure of the context. I might have actually said devolution. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
What was the context?
I don't think I've ever heard that before, but in this context, it sounded very apropos.
No, devolution is like the opposite. It's like a step backwards. I do use the word, so it is possible that I said it. I'm not sure exactly what the context is.
So like a reverse evolution. I was thinking of it as in, like, devil as in Satan, like that kind of devolution.
It's just like the word evolution, except it has a D in front of it. It's a contraction of the word de-evolution. So instead of having two E's and a hyphen, you would just have one E and just it would be evolution.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, it sounds like it would have the word devil in, but.
Yeah.
I'm not a devil worshiper, damn it.
What's that?
I said I'm not a devil worshiper, damn it. I'm just because no, because I have to keep.
If I had a nickel for every Satanist that said I'm not a devil worshiper, I would be probably twice as rich as I already am.
No, that's actually a joke back to actually because I know you guys talked to this guy Ego Diabolus. You know what I'm talking about? And we actually have a history going back to the Cathedral of the Black Goat, which at the time, I don't know if he even knows it now, but at the time, he thought I was really seriously, you know, along the lines of their paradigm. What I was doing was something akin to the Order of Nine Angles, Aeonic Insight role. And seeing if I could do something that was, to my mind, impossible. And it proved to be impossible, and I wasted a little bit of time. But that's beside the point. So by me saying that, I'm just trying to say that I kind of find the history of, like, where I've been kind of funny. And a lot of people still remember me from, like, 4 years ago or whatever and think that, you know, I'm sacrificing goats or something like that, which I never did, but I'm just saying.
Excellent. that's actually really funny because Jason Sorrell, or Ego Diabolus, he's actually the one who turned me on to your book and got me interested in this whole thing.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
I thought that guy hated me, man. Cause I don't know that he knew exactly what I was doing when I was doing it because I totally, like, in forums and shit like that would just lambaste him. But what I was trying to do was earn another guy's respect by doing that. So it wasn't like I had a problem with him. As a matter of fact, I've always thought he was an awesome guy. But I kind of had to do it. It was a role. It was like a part that I had to play for the time being. Kind of weird. I mean, I know you won't understand probably most of what I'm saying by this because it's like all personal history and shit that you probably don't know anything about.
That makes sense as far as, to me, it sounds like some form of a Sun Tzu type deal where you were doing the double agent thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. I mean, I don't know how familiar you are with the Order of Nine Angles, but they have something called an Aeonic Insight role, which is where you take up, like if you were a Satanist, you would pretend to be a Christian or pretend to be a Muslim and try to do that the best you possibly could. So that you could learn how the Aeon itself works or how it functions. I know that doesn't really, it's kind of hard to explain.
I'm quite familiar with what you're talking about. By inducing yourself to that psychodrama, you and convincing yourself of the paradigm, or at least to the point that's necessary for you to participate within that paradigm, you gain a better understanding by physically experiencing it.
Not necessarily physical, but yeah, pretty much like that, I guess you would say. It's kind of like, because I've been a Satanist for quite a while, and before I got involved with the Cathedral of the Black Goat, I was actually involved with somebody named Diane Vera. I don't know, I'm pretty sure you know who that is.
I know who that is, yeah.
I was actually, you know, pretty well involved with her organization, and I left because I didn't really dig the personality thing going on there. She's a very controlling person and very domineering and stuff like that. I mean, I'm sure if you've ever posted on any of her forums, well, they're not active now, but when they were, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. All the rules, all the constrictions, everything like that. So when I left, I said, well, what's next for me in Satanism? And I said, I have an idea. Let me try to take the shittiest satanic paradigm I can think of besides the Joy of Sitchin, because that's just so shitty I couldn't make it work, and see if I can make this believable, if I can make it rational. You know what I mean? Kind of like as a test to myself almost. Matter of fact, I did this recently in a forum anonymously. Not the same paradigm, but what I did was I took Levian Satanism and I try to make that idea cogent, which I don't really believe that it is personally, but I challenge myself in weird ways like that. You can say I'm just a funny little guy, but anyway.
Interesting. Well, in light of the time frame, actually, I wanted to talk a little bit about what's coming in the other four volumes of the five books of Cain, and also I've heard you hinting to the Tao of Satanism, and I'm quite curious as to if you can give us any insight as to what's really going to be coming.
Yeah, actually, the Tao of Satan is going to be next. It's kind of like a sequel, I guess you would say, to postmodern Satanism, whereas postmodern Satanism was kind of a template for personal discovery of meaning with regard to Satanism. For the individual, the Tao of Satan is going to be pretty much my own understanding completely. So, like, I'll get a lot more into the Eastern philosophy. I'll get a lot more into, you know, like, terms like Dharmakaya and my mathematical philosophy, my Pythagoreanism, et cetera. It's going to be a totally different – it's going to have chapters, et cetera. It's going to be a totally different presentation. That's next. That's probably not going to be out for another year, just because right now I have a 7-month-old little boy that takes a lot of my time up. Five Books of Cain is not going to actually be five volumes. It's only going to be three volumes. It will be five books, but the second, third, and fourth books are going to be one volume, and then book five is going to be volume three, and that's after that, after the Tao of Satan, in other words. And that's probably a good 2 years out for volume two and 3 to 4 years out for volume three.
Excellent. I can't wait. I mean, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I just had a couple more questions. One, I know a lot of our listeners would probably be interested to know, do you have a favorite H.P. Lovecraft story? Or maybe a couple different stories that you like above others, and I guess why.
Yeah, hold on a second. Let me. It's been so long since I've read Lovecraft. There is one that I like more than any other, but let me go to my bookshelf here. Dream Cycle of H.P. Lovecraft, and it is, I think it's the ones with, The Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath. I think that's the one. I'm pretty sure that's the one. That's the one where Randolph Carter is going through the dream world, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm actually rereading that currently right now, because in the Journal of Magic or something like that. I don't know, some sort of magical scientific journal or something. There's an article by a guy, and he talks about that story and how it relates to the Kabbalah and like, the clip-off and stuff like that. Lovecraft, the things he writes about parallels, like occult things that he would not have known about otherwise. So that's why I'm reading that. And then when I finish that, I'm going to read the article in question. That's very interesting.
Yeah, I think that work actually puts his entire corpus into a different light. Like, if you read, like, all of the Cthulhu Cycle and all this stuff, you read that and you have one idea of where he's coming from. And then you read that one story, and
right.
It just reshapes everything, like his idea of what's really going on.
Right.
That's why I like
suddenly
it.
The old ones aren't really the... the evil alien monstrosities, you know, coming to wreak havoc and, destroy lives and drive people insane. But they're more gods in, like, a benevolent, traditional fashion, I guess. It does put a different spin on it.
Interesting. Any other questions, Venger?
Up on the new website, which is cultofcthulhu.net, I just put up a interview with Zandora LaVey that I did just this last week, and I already promised the next interview would be Ariok, who's the man behind the newly renovated website and the Cordalis Metasigil and things like that. He's an artist, web designer. So we're going to be interviewing him. But I was wondering, after him, with you, Jason King, would you be open to, you know, doing like a question and answer, and then we could put that up on the site, you know, increase traffic to both of our endeavors.
Oh, I'm always game. Yeah, sure. Definitely.
Okay. That'd be great.
Awesome. Now, getting back to the five books of Cain, I'm curious. Now, at this point, in the end of the first volume, what we have is we're all the way to Cain leaving. What happens next in the story?
Well, it ends with Cain killing Abel.
Right. It ends with Cain killing Abel and leaving.
No, actually, he doesn't leave at
that
point.
Oh, well.
It just the last verses, and Cain wept.
Right.
So he's kind of like kneeling down at his brother's corpse. After that, he leaves and he finds the master. That's the very first thing that happens in exile. And he turns himself over to what's been building inside of him. So like the apparitions that he experienced in early book 10 and also in book 9 become manifest in him. And he becomes a true Satanist. And then it deals with the dynasties and the two lines. The line of course, Seth is introduced. It parallels the biblical story, really. Exile is not going to go outside of the book of Genesis. So pretty much the flood is kind of like, it's not quite the end of book 2, but it's kind of like the apex of book 2.
Now, I'm curious, is Lilith going to actually be the procreator for the line of Cain, or?
No.
No, okay. I just wonder.
They do become lovers at a point, but that has more, it's more of a, Lilith had her humanity stripped from her in the myth that I'm presenting. So she's incapable of procreation, actually. At least physical procreation.
Right. This is very probably the most fascinating piece of literature that I've come across at this point, because I don't think that I've really experienced anything that comes so close to the traditional stories that were crammed down my throat, but yet gives it from a perspective that I already kind of assumed was there.
That's the exact point of it. That's the exact point of it.
And I kind of I figured that. I actually I'm also very interested in the ancient daemons, and interested in them. There's the fact of them, because in some manners I kind of look at them as the pantheon and the Cthulhu mythos.
There is a reason that it's not quite spelled out. A lot of things too. I find Lovecraft to be one of the greatest storytellers. And I like a lot of the way he hints at things, but never really, you know, puts them completely out there. And I utilize that tactic a lot, because I think it gets people to open their own minds to what is within or what they see. So the demons are not going to be discussed again, because they were subsumed into the fallen choirs. So what they are is left, I guess, to the imagination or to the interpretation.
Certainly.
So I think it's
great what you're doing, man. I enjoyed the book so much so that I actually went out and bought the deluxe edition so I could just go ahead and get everything that you had in one book. That way I didn't have to, you know, purchase different books, and this way I have it and I'm ready for the new stuff.
Whenever it comes out. The cool thing about the deluxe edition, probably the best part of it, is it doesn't have that jackass picture on the back cover. I don't know. Whose face is that anyway? Some moron. Anyway.
Anyway.
I can attest that B. Zeno has been talking your show up for all week, pretty much. He's been like, oh, my God, I've been reading this stuff, you know, the postmodern Satanism and the books of Cain, and God damn, they're really awesome. Like, I didn't expect them to be this great, but it's like tapping into something that, like, oh, it's really powerful and creative, and it's just, like, completely getting my juices flowing, and, you know, so he's been really into it. So then that's gotten kind of me excited, and that's, you know, that's one reason that we wanted to have you on and see where our different currents collided and met and where they diverged. And
yeah, I think we represent the same current.
Yeah.
I think we represent the same current. We just view it a little differently, which is a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I totally agree. I think coming at it from some slightly different perspectives is very necessary.
Well, the thing that makes us all adults in the room is that we can understand what exactly myth is and what it is not. And we're not sitting here talking about, like, well, damn it, Jesus really rose on the third day or some shit like that. And if you don't believe that, you're going to hell.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Well, guys, I hate to break from this conversation, but there's one thing that I wanted to announce of my own personal stuff that needs to happen on this show. You're familiar with Satanic International, Zach. I am teaming up with him to do another Blog Talk Radio show. It's actually his show, but I'm just entering in as co-host. And that first episode will be happening this coming Wednesday, which is the 14th at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Zach's awesome.
Zach's
awesome guy.
Great guy.
What is that California time? 3 o'clock.
Is that
3 or 3 o'clock? Okay.
3 o'clock, yes. So I had to get that out there. We've only got a couple of minutes left in the show. I suspected that this would probably be one of our best shows, and you proved that right, Jason.
Oh, you're wrong, dude. I'm just kidding. I'm really honored by the fact that you think that much of what I've done, because, you know, I read it from time to time, and the more I read the Five Books of Cain, the more I think it sounds almost pretentious at times, but that's just me being self-critical, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I place a great deal of importance on lure. I myself, being a huge psychonaut, I think that lure is very important because it helps to put you in the right state of mind to absorb the gnosis, as you put it, that's being presented. So, if anything else, that's a big reason why I'm so impressed by it.
Well, thanks, man. I do appreciate
it. Well, we've got another caller coming in real quick here.
Oh, it's last minute.
Yep.
Hey, guys.
Oh, yeah, you. Hey.
Hey, I'm just, you know, wondering what this talk is about.
What?
I'm wondering what this show is about. I'm trying to figure it out.
Well, it's about the left-hand path, Satanism, Lovecraft, chaos magic, the fourth way.
Oh, you guys believe in that stuff?
It's the audio troll. How you doing, man?
What do you believe, caller? Hello, caller? What do you believe?
Yes. Oh, no. I'm just confused on what this topic is about.
All right, hang on one second.
You listen to 58 minutes of a show and you don't know what it's about?
Put the blunt down
or something, man.
Everybody can hang on just one quick second. I want to state that the show looks like it's going to go into overtime. The live audio is going to quit in about 50 seconds, but everything that's said after can be archived. So, now, as to answer your question, this show is ultimately just a quick look into Jason King here's recent piece of literature and the introduction of a postmodern Satanism as a philosophy. Beyond that, I don't really know what you...
I thought you guys were like, this was like a cult or something like that.
Well, the the Cthulhu cult is a cult, yes.
I happen to be Venger Satanus, the Cult of Cthulhu High Priest, and my co-host is B. Zeno. He's the first priest of Relay. And we are, you know, the leaders of an actual cult of religion based on H.P. Lovecraft's Cthulhu mythos. So, yeah, but we also talk about other things besides cult business, things relating to that, like Satanism and the Fourth Way, you know, chaos magic.
It's just a very interesting topic. Like, what's your whole motive behind it?
Creating productive change, not only in the world, but in us as individuals.
Oh, so like having Satan take over the world, something like that?
No, not really at all. Basically, as people are, they are asleep or, you know, unenlightened and just kind of drifting through life. And we want to change things and shake people up and get them to be more conscious or reach new and higher states of consciousness and take possession of their life and be able to go out and do the things they want, live how they want, and hopefully some of them, some of their personality or some of their essence will survive after death and become like God.
Oh, all right. Well, I'm Catholic, so I'm going to talk to you later, guys.
All right. See ya.
can I ask you a dumb question, Venger?
What's that?
Let me ask you a dumb question. Why'd you waste your time, dude?
I don't know. Because it was a pleasant distraction from the business at hand.
That it was. I was kind of pissed off he didn't call a little earlier. So.
Yeah, I know. We could have ripped on him through the rest of the show. But it also keeps me in good practice. I mean, if I only talk to people on my level or my caliber of thought or consciousness, I'm not really putting myself in the place of the common man or, you know, or that stratum. So I like to engage people that don't know what the fuck I'm talking about and think I'm a ridiculous idiot sometimes because it gives me another perspective.
Well, that's cool. But then when he said, but I'm a Catholic, I'll see you later, guys, that's when you should have said, hey, wait a minute. Why are you running away? Jesus will protect you.
Right.
No, I'm kidding. But
yeah. No, at that point I was like, okay, hang up, flick.
No, the dude sounded like he smoked like 3 blunts and then he called in. Like that's where his 58 minutes went.
He sounded like he just wandered into the wrong place at the wrong time. And, you know, if this was a different world and we were live in person, it would have been funny to, like, I don't know, stab him with a tentacle and ritually sacrifice him. But like
you
I
with
said,
the tentacle.
Another, another time in another darker reality. call in and we will abuse you. That's our policy here at the U's.
That it is.
Anyway, I think we probably ran enough of the show, so I want to thank you guys for being great on the show and stimulating our thought and conversation. So, yeah. Cool.
Well, thanks for the invite, man.
Anything you want to close with?
I'll say thanks for the invite, man, and anytime. Just give me about a week's notice, and I'll be there, man.
That sounds great.
Awesome.
And, yeah, give me, like, 3 or 4 weeks, and I will be sending you some interview questions so then we can get you up on the website and yeah, delve more into your ideas and paradigm and thought and your work, and it'll be very cool.
Indeed.
Dino, do you have anything to say?
Just hurry up and finish writing those damn books, damn it.
Hey, man, I said he's 7 months old, man. Give it till he's about a year, then I can.
Yeah,
and now
no,
he's
I've
going
got a 3-year
all over
old, man.
Place and at first he was just a whiny little motherfucker. Like, he cried all the time, so I could never leave him. Now he's crawling all over the place, so I can't leave him.
Also, he was a very impatient man. He bugged me to, like, do work all the time. He's like, Venger, I need you to make these videos and write this stuff and do all this stuff that you need to do. I'm like, God damn it.
Hey, wait a minute. Oh, I see what's going on here. I see what's missing. Venger has two books released. I have two books released. So maybe, Beast, TC, you need to get your ass to making two books, and then you can start talking. No, I'm just kidding. I'm pulling your leg, dude. 100%.
I'm actually in the process, as you speak of it, of writing a very comprehensive book. It's just way more exhausting than I thought it would originally be.
Yeah,
it is.
So,
writing is hard.
And that's coming from a guy with a bachelor's in English, man.
Yeah. It's, hey, I do my own editing too, so for
but
better or worse.
It is coming. The world, according to my eyes, is definitely coming. So, hopefully, you all won't run too scaredly once you see the madness that roams in my mind.
No, man, we all grow off each other. I think that's kind of what it's all about, man.
Yeah,
I agree. I agree entirely, which is why I put my mind to even writing this.
Cool. All right, on that note, I guess I'll talk to you guys later, and thanks everyone for listening. And, we'll be on next week.
Awesome.
Cool.